Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Thanks for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you from the wonderfully cozy studio in the back of Roberta's restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And you are listening to Good Food, the show where we talk with people who are using food as a vehicle for social good. I'm your host, Daniel Meyer, and I'm happy to be joined today by Nick Vallel, the co-founder of a bar and restaurant in Washington, D.C. called Cause, which is, as far as I can tell, the world's first, quote, philanthropub. Or at least the first bar that's been described as such that I've ever heard of. So, Nick, first of all, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us today. And second of all, what is a philanthropub?
Well, first, yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you reaching out, and always excited to tell people a little bit more about the concept and what a philanthropub is. So really, the very basics of what we're trying to do is we run a bar and restaurant right here in Washington, D.C., near the U Street Strip, so a really, really fun place to go out. And we serve great food that's locally sourced, have some of the best service in town. And then I think the part that makes us truly unique is the fact that 100% of our profits are donated to grassroots organizations operating both here locally and, you know, around D.C. as well as international organizations. So really trying to make it, you know, fun and easy to get involved in charitable giving.
So let me ask you the first question that leaps to my mind and probably does to others as well, which is that the restaurant business is notorious for being a particularly difficult one. You know, many restaurants operate on really razor-thin margins and need to eke out every bit of profit they can to stay up and running and competitive. So how do you get away with taking your hard-earned profits and just giving them away?
Well, very carefully, and you know, we recognize that this isn't a, you know, an experiment and something that hasn't been done before, but we think that we've done a lot of things to maximize the chances of success. So, for example, you know, just in terms of a differentiator, you know, we certainly have a unique marketing angle to reach out to people, and people, there's a lot of goodwill towards cause and towards what we're trying to achieve here. So I think that's one thing. We did everything that we could to keep costs low to begin operations. So be that, you know, lawyers that volunteered their time pro bono to help us do our registration, local artists all around the city that came in to help with the build-out, with the decor. We've just had people kind of coming out of the woodwork to help us keep just stay lean, keep costs low, so that we can, you know, maximize that profit margin and maximize the amount of money that we're going to be giving to these organizations.
So what were your actual opening costs as opposed to what they might have been if you had been, you know, throwing caution to the wind and doing it maybe like other places do?
Sure. We're about 2,500 square feet, and our total startup budget wound up being right around $150,000. I think given the amount of space and the amount of work that we had done, I mean, I haven't calculated the total amount of volunteer, you know, the value of the volunteer time, but I think we easily could have spent, you know, $400,000 to $500,000 on the same amount of space on the build out and the startup costs.
So how does the philanthropic model work? You say you donate 100% of profits to charitable organizations. So how do you you know, how do you pay your staff? How do you pay yourselves? Do you have outside funding, or is everything sort of operating the way that a, you know, a normal restaurant might? You're just donating it to others.
Sure. So it's a good question and one that we get often. We want to operate, you know, just like any other restaurant. Obviously, we want to be very efficient. We want to be lean, but we also want to be sustainable, because the idea behind this model is that if we can get it right, this is going to be a sustainable source of funds for grassroots organizations, you know, for a long time going forward, and hopefully something we can expand. So we do pay all of our expenses. We have rent to pay. We pay all of our staff at competitive wages. And we do this because we certainly want to have great service. We didn't want to be reliant on volunteers and volunteerism, right. Even though I'm a huge proponent of that. We want to be competitive day in and day out. We went out and found a great chef who I think, you know, puts us a cut above a lot of other restaurants in that, you know, just very creative in the kitchen and what he's done with our food that we have here. So we pay all of our bills, you know, cover all of our costs. At the end of, you know, at the end of the month, at the end of the quarter, the profit that we have left, which would normally go to your stakeholders or your owners, we then instead donate to these organizations that we're being, that we're featuring. We feature between 3 and 6 organizations per quarter. So we have an advisory board that helps us vet and select those organizations. And then, like I said, at the end of the quarter, when we close out the quarter, the profit that we have remaining then is distributed to those organizations.
Then we rotate
a new group in, and then we do it all over again.
How do you select the organizations that you donate to? Because I'm sure there are, you know, a number that you and sort of the other people involved in the project are interested in, and then maybe as you get more... you know, more popular, there might be organizations sort of coming to you and wanting to sort of be included into your model. So what's the process? What kind of places do you donate to and what's your criteria like?
Yeah, it's a good question. And certainly you hit it right on the head that there's a lot of need out there. There's a lot of great organizations and a lot of them that would love to be featured. I think we've had hundreds of applications come in, which we do have an application form on our website. We did set up the board of advisors because we wanted it to be an entirely transparent process and something that's outside of Raj and myself. So the board looks at some set criteria that we have, and really the things that we're looking at are twofold. We're certainly looking at the sustainability of the action being taken by the organization. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at, you know, making sure that they're addressing the root cause of the problem. That they're working on with their beneficiaries. I think we all recognize that there's just too few funds out there for Band-Aid solutions, and so we really want to focus on organizations that, whether it's they're building their own internal sustainability through a revenue generation, or they're working themselves out of a job, you know, building the capacity of their beneficiaries. Really, sustainability can mean a lot of different things in this context, but we want to make sure that's a big focus for these organizations. And second, we want to make sure that they're measuring what they're doing and the impact that they're having. We've certainly, in the development world, we've been, you know, pushing money toward causes for a long period of time, but I think, you know, in the past, we weren't as focused on the measurement and really learning from what we're doing so that we're not making the same mistakes again. So we're really looking at that in terms of how are these organizations measuring what they're doing. And beyond those two things, you know, we want to have a diverse group of organizations featured because as part of our model, when you come here, you have your dinner, you have beers with friends. When you get the bill at the end of the night, you actually, you know, you have the power to choose which organization you'd like the profits of your meal to go toward.
Wow. That's
and
great.
So we want to hopefully have something that appeals to each of our customers coming in. So, you know, that's in terms of the issue area that they're addressing, whether that be homelessness or whether that be food deserts or, you know, all sorts of issues, as well as geographic. So we have some local organizations because some people would like to see their dollars stay close to home. Other people, you know, would like to see that money go overseas. So we hope to have, like I said, that diverse group of choices for the patrons that come through.
So other than being presented with sort of a choice of where they'd like their money to go at the end, is there anything, you know, if I'm going into to cause for a drink or something to eat, you know, am I going to realize that anything is really different about this place until, you know, until the end of the meal where I'm offered a choice of where to give my money? Or is there sort of more, do people know what they're involved in before they come in the door?
I think some do and some don't. And we did that intentionally. We want it to be a great neighborhood bar and restaurant where, you know, we have a great burger. And if somebody comes here because they love the burger, that's fantastic. If they come here because the bartenders provide some of the best service around, fantastic. If they come here because of the mission of the organization, that's also great. So the, you know, when you're in the space, the information, you know, about the organization, et cetera, is available if you want to seek it out. So for those that are interested in learning more about the organizations, you know, our staff, they've had a chance to interact with the organizations. We have more, you know, whether it be a brochure or pamphlet, that's available, that's behind the bar. But for those that, you know, just want to have a fun night, you know, have beers, you know, hang out, that's also available because we don't want it to feel like a push where you have to interact with it. Just by coming into the bar and restaurant, just by choosing cause, you're a part of what we're doing here, whether you want to be an active participant or not.
Have you been able to, you know, obviously you're in a pretty popular area to go out, and there's lots of other bars and restaurants around. Is there anything about your model that sort of puts you at a deficit in terms of competing with these other places, or are you just, you know, are you right there with them? You know, are you just as competitive as any place who's keeping all of their cash?
Good question. I think we're competitive. I think we're going to be, like I said, from the very beginning, Raj is my co-founder. Mm-hmm. You know, we said we want to compete on food. We want to compete on drinks. We want to compete on service before anything else. And we'd like it just to be a bonus, the fact that the profits from the, you know, from your meal or your drinks are going to charity. But that certainly, we don't want that to be our defining factor. And I think, you know, looking at the reviews online that are coming in, I think we've hit that nail on the head. And, you know, to do so, we went out and found people that understand how to run a very successful restaurant. John Jarecki and Dave Presley, we spoke to them, it's been about a year and a half or 2 years ago now, recognizing that we didn't have the experience in the industry. I've been in the nonprofit world my whole career, and Raj has been doing psychology and consulting work. And, you know, had we tried to open a restaurant, we would have, you know, failed on all accounts. But these guys, you know, they have the experience of been involved in 20 to 25 bar and restaurant openings. So, you know, they're very good at what they do. And I think that shows in terms of the product that they've turned out here.
So you don't have to answer this question if you don't want to, but do you have some sort of feeling of, like, moral superiority when you look at all of your competitors down the street and you say, I am hanging right with you and we are bringing in clientele and bringing in money, but I'm giving my money to people who need it and you're giving it to your stakeholders? I know I would if I were in your position, or at least do you have some, is there a particular sense of pride that you get for sort of hanging in there in a tough business and doing good at the same time?
I mean, we're very proud of what we're trying to achieve here. I think that's as far as I'd go. I've been working with small businesses my entire life, advising them, and I think all these businesses are great. We have a certain goal and a certain mission of what we want to do, and you know, we're proud of that.
What's been the reaction of your customers so far? I mean, obviously it's a fairly popular place, and people keep coming in. Do you have any feedback about sort of how people are into it based on the mission, or obviously they like the food and the drink? Sort of what kind of feedback have you gotten so far?
Yeah, like I said, it really kind of comes in two pockets. We certainly have a lot of people that were early adopters, and, you know, whether they come from the nonprofit world or they've done volunteering, or, you know, they just heard about it and thought it was a cool idea. You know, the people that have been with us from day one, driven by the mission, just because they, you know, surely they go out and have fun, but they were also kind of drawn to us because of the mission of cause. On the other side, you know, we have regular customers who come here, I don't think at all because of the mission. Like, they love the Quintal Burger, great. And, you know, as long as that keeps them coming back and this becomes one of their favorite spots, we're happy on both sides. I think it's been interesting. One of the fun things for me is, you know, for those that do get interested in the model, you know, watching them around a table of four people talk when they get the bill about, you know, which organization should get the profits from their meal. Like, really seeing people interact with that part, whether they came, you know, whichever reason they came here for, is pretty exciting, because, you know, they're learning about new organizations that they may not have known about before. And it's fun for them. Like, you know, they've just had beers, and this is just a bonus, the fact that they get to be involved and kind of make this donation just by doing what they'd regularly do anyway.
Say the name of that hamburger again. What's it called?
The Quintal Burger.
What is that? It sounds interesting. It's one of the most popular things on our
menu. It's a quinoa and lentil base veggie burger that you know, kind of has a Greek yogurt flavor with some feta on it, and those things just fly. I don't think we can hardly make them fast enough to keep up with it.
Wow, who came up with that?
Executive chef Adam Stein just came up with some really cool, just across the menu, very cool, very creative in how he uses ingredients, but also was a vegetarian for about 5 years, and so came up with some, what I think are some fantastic vegetarian options, including two different vegetarian burgers, like I said, that are really popular on our menu.
What's the other one?
Shroom and oat burger.
Nice.
Really cool. Yeah, really cool patty that comes out of there. Great texture. You know, I think we're rapidly becoming a favorite spot in the vegetarian community in DC as well, which is great, because, you know, our standard burger is our number one seller, and I think the Quintal is number three, like just behind it. So it's kind of neat to be able to hit in both those in both those areas and do it well.
Everybody likes a burger.
It seems that way. All right, goes well with a nice cold beer.
Well, now that we know all about the burgers, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Nick Vallel of Cause DC, and we will be right back.
I ain't looking for no trouble tonight.
This one's called Let It Go by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I ain't looking for no fight. Just let it go now. I ain't looking for no showdown. So won't you
like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Keeping score now. Just let it go now. Let's talk it over.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
We are back. You're listening to Good Food on the Heritage Radio Network, and we have been talking with Nick Vallel of Cause DC, a bar and restaurant in DC that is described as a philanthropub. So now that we know a little bit about Cause and what its mission is and how it runs, I want to talk just a little bit about sort of how you guys got to this point. You mentioned earlier that neither you or your co-founder were in the restaurant business. You were in the development world, I think, and he was an academic. So, you know, when did it strike you that, or what did your previous work sort of do to inform this shift? And when did it strike you that this was sort of the direction you guys wanted to go in?
Yeah, well, Raj and I are friends from graduate school. We started graduate school at George Mason at the same time. I then left and went and did my Peace Corps service in Togo, West Africa. And it was right after coming back that we first talked about this idea. And I guess it's been about 6 years ago now. And I think we both came at it from very different perspectives, mm-hmm. but kind of arrived at the same end point. For me, it was having been out in the field, you know, working with some great nonprofit organizations in areas with very significant need, and seeing that these, you know, smaller organizations oftentimes have some of the best solutions, but they don't have a marketing arm, they don't have a PR firm, you know, they're sort of nose to the ground, helping as many people as they possibly can, but struggle to get, you know, the publicity that they need and to get the funds that they need. So, you know, when I would come back, I'd have the chance to tell somebody about a great organization in Togo or in Swaziland or other places I'd traveled. And those people would get excited about it. And maybe they would spread the word. Maybe they would volunteer some time. Maybe they would even donate. And so for me, it was kind of like, how do we take that to scale? How do we provide more exposure for these great kind of organizations? Now, for Raj, on the other hand, he was working full-time when I had just come back, mm-hmm. working full-time, working on his dissertation, you know, very, very busy and certainly not with a fat checkbook, you know, being a full-time student right. and working full-time. So he's saying, you know, that's fantastic, but how do people like me get involved? You know, I don't have money to donate. My time is very scarce, you know, working crazy hours plus school. You know, how does somebody like myself get involved? And actually, you know, the conversation occurred over a beer at a bar, as it should.
Uh-huh.
And,
as all important conversations in history have.
What do people in this circumstance do, and how do we reach them, and how do we make it fun to get involved in something like this? And, you know, I think bar and restaurant, that's where a lot of people enjoy spending their leisure time, and that's kind of how we struck on the idea.
So how did you... You know, you could have done good, you know, quote, good in any number of ways, and you obviously had been in the Peace Corps, and then you sort of hit on you hit on food and drink as sort of your entry point into how you want to get people involved. You know, then what? You were a Peace Corps veteran and an academic who had no time or money. How did you turn that idea around into a full-fledged functioning bar and restaurant?
Well, it took a while, and I think we really benefited from kind of the slow development of this idea. So I then went back abroad. I was in Swaziland for about 3.5 years. I benefited from that, from working with a lot of small businesses, and I think that gave me some good insight. But throughout that next, I guess it was about 4 or 5 years, it was kind of like an open source, what I compare it to, is we were talking to everybody we could about this idea. You mm-hmm. know, would this work? And, you know, how crazy is this idea? And do you have any input? And we really benefited from a lot of people sharing their insights, or, you know, wouldn't it be cool if you did this? And, yeah, it's cool. And so that got built into the business model. So over those next kind of 4 or 5 years, we learned a lot about how it would be structured and could it be structured and could it be done. And then when I came back again, that's when we got serious about it, about a year and a half ago. And so we started talking to industry people, who have a lot of experience in running restaurants and saying, is this off the wall or can this work? And can this work in a serious way? And one of those early people that we spoke to was John Jarecki, who I mentioned earlier. And he, just got really excited about it and saw the potential for this thing to really be a big thing and really do a lot of good. And so he said, he was game if we were, and he would help us with the operational side and make sure that we were solid on that side. And so we took it from there. We started bringing together resources and trying to raise funds. We did a crowdfunding campaign, which was quite successful on Indiegogo, where people could make small donations.
How much did you raise that way?
Quite a bit of that, because for $200, people that donated $200 could have their own bar stool in the bar.
Wow!
And so if you come in, you'll see people's names or phrases or whatever they wanted engraved on their bar stool.
So great! So, that's what everybody wants, is their own bar stool.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite fun, especially those first few weeks. People were just really excited about seeing their bar stool. I don't think they looked up when they came in the restaurant. they were focused on, where is my bar stool? So, but I mean, we were all along, we were building a community as well. So even before we opened the doors, we had a lot of people who were very interested in what we were trying to do, and it kind of signed on, whether it was through volunteering to help us paint or making a contribution or volunteering their skills. I mean, we had a PR firm who just got excited about it and donated their time, BRG. They did a great job for us. So like I said before, it was building that community and just people coming out of the woodwork saying, we like what you're doing and we want to help.
What's the heart? We've heard about all of the really amazing things about your place. Are there any particularly hard parts about running a business this way, or what's the hardest part about keeping your model afloat and sustainable?
Well, I mean, it certainly is. We still are in a very competitive industry, and we have to make sure that we are, at or above our competitors in all different ways. So it's building, building that crowd of regulars and having the word of mouth spread, because despite the fact that we've had some good press, there's still a lot of people out there that don't know Cause exists. And so it's really just getting out there and making sure that we get the word out and we bring those events in and we bring those people in, whether it be for a DJ or a live band or our games night or whatever it is. So, it's still slow growth. And, when you're very passionate about the organizations that you're featuring, you want to do the best you can to get them as much money and exposure as possible. So, it's a lot of work. I certainly won't suggest that it isn't. You have to stay focused on why you're doing it, because there's certainly no monetary reward in it. And actually, Raj and myself, because we don't work in the bar day to day, don't take salaries from it. It's just, I guess, keeping your eyes on where you're going and what you're hoping to achieve to kind of get you through the slog of opening a place like this.
Right. Well, I'm sure as you see that your donations to worthy causes going up and up, that must keep you going. Do you have a count of a tally of how much you've donated so far?
So in Q1 we managed to do about $8,500 going out. We're now in Q2, so I can't really speak to these numbers. We only close at the end of the quarter.
Yeah.
But we're certainly hoping to see that continue to rise. And I think, hearing from the organizations there, I think it's been a good good match for them. You know, a lot of great exposure, whether it be featured in articles that we're featured in, or, you know, through the people that come through the doors of the bar, hearing about them and potentially signing up to mentor or to volunteer.
That's great.
You know, we're getting great feedback from the organizations and more and more applying. Like I said earlier, it's becoming very competitive to be featured at the bar.
Yeah, of course. Are there, I thought I remember reading maybe it was a Times article a little while ago about other places around the country who had sort of similar goals and maybe similar models. And you guys may have even been mentioned in that piece as well. Have you been in communication with other bars or restaurants who are sort of at the same thing that you guys are? Have you been able to learn from each other at all?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's weird how these things have kind of all come to pass around the same time. So we opened in October. Then shortly thereafter, the group in Houston opened up. I believe it was in December. There's a group in Melbourne who opened, I want to say, last month. And then there's the guys in Portland who I think are hoping to open next month. And so, yeah, I mean, I still haven't spoken with the guys in Houston, but I had a great call with Ryan in Portland. And we're just kind of, you know, we're a few months ahead, so kind of telling him some of the things that we've figured out and you know, the guys in Australia as well. So, yeah, I think as much as we can kind of learn from each other. But it's kind of cool to think that this might be some sort of trend of businesses looking at this multiple bottom line or looking at this model for creating impact.
What advice did you give those guys? If they're a little bit behind where you are, what did you tell them that they needed to know?
You know, just some of the ways that we built out our community. We have a really cool ambassador program that we started up because we just had a lot of people once we were open and people that had heard about it saying, you know, I love what you're doing. How do I get involved? And while I said we don't do volunteers in the restaurant, we certainly wanted to give these people a chance to get involved and help us out. So that's a team of young professionals as well as some graduate students and undergraduate students who, you know, they're learning about social enterprise through, you know, what we're doing, but also out there helping us spread the word, helping bring additional events in. So, you know, that was something that we didn't plan on doing, but we were getting so many requests to get involved and volunteer. That we set up that program, and that's been a great success. You know, I think both ways too, because it's great to be able to share that input or insight as well to these you know younger folks that are interested in maybe starting their own social enterprise down the road, and we benefit you know from the great word of mouth that they spread for us.
That's great. So, like, you might be totally thrilled if you know next year some upstart you know new philanthropub opens down the street from you guys. You'd be proud if you saw that happen.
Yeah, why not? That'd be a huge win, I think. And it's fun. We get a lot of requests from different people, different cities, different groups, you know, writing in to say, how do I open a philanthropic pub in my city? And, you know, we're an open book. We've shared business plans. We've shared insights. We've tried to share anything and everything because the more of these kind of things that there are out there, you know, the more organizations that we're helping, the more people that we're helping ultimately.
That's fantastic. I was interested by what you said earlier when you were, sort of planting the seeds of this project with Raj and how he said, you know, he's busy, he doesn't have a lot of money, he doesn't have a lot of time. I'm wondering if you guys have thought, and you must have, about sort of if the traditional model of charitable giving, you know, just sort of opening up your checkbook, if people even have those anymore, and sort of writing a check to some charity that interests you, if that doesn't really sort of suit the younger generation or sort of the bar clientele as much anymore. And if you sort of thought about new ways to explore how to get, you know, get a younger crowd into sort of consistent charitable giving without it seeming onerous on their time, on their wallets and all of that.
Yeah, I certainly see this younger generation, first of all, being just very, very socially aware. And I think, you know, that's partially due to the media and news coverage that we have now. Just the accessibility of this information, but I see that the younger crowd wants to be very involved, and I think that's great. They want to understand where is the money going, and how is the organization selected, and you know what are the results of what my money is doing. And I don't think it's that they don't want to write the check, or like you said, if there is a check being written,
right.
You know, jump on PayPal and make that contribution.
Right.
But I think they are holding organizations to a higher standard and wanting to make sure that the money that we're spending, the time that we're putting into this is helping, is you know, actually doing what it's designed to do. And I think that's great. I think, you know, this level of involvement in philanthropy is a great sign. And I think, you know, it's great to see that younger generation taking the time and effort to get involved and ask those questions. So, and you know, if we can do it in fun ways like a bar, I think that's just a, you know, kind of a double bonus.
Well, I think we're just about out of time, and I think that is probably the best place that we could possibly stop. So, Nick, thank you so much. You guys have been listening to Good Food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Daniel Meyer. And Nick, thank you again. It was really great to learn about Cause, and good luck, and keep us posted.
Thanks again for having me.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.